For those who do not know anything about family systems theory, don't worry about it. I just want to share something about my own family. It's that I come from a family of preachers. I was doomed to do this, whether I knew it or not. In my own generation above me, there are three pastors, two Episcopal priests, and one congregational minister, my aunt. And the good news about this is that when we come together to tell stories about church, there are often some great things to share. And one great thing that my aunt Cheryl shares about her congregation that she had in rural Missouri was a story about Gladys Lowenhaupt. Gladys Lowenhaupt. Lots of Germanic people in rural Missouri. Gladys Lowenhaupt was a legend in her church at Ebenezer First Church of Christ, the United Church of Christ in Augusta, Missouri. There were only three churches in town, but that didn't keep Gladys from telling pastors in this small town in the 1950s not to play too fast and loose with the theology. She had her eye on those pastors, making sure that they were on the up and up. And the story I'm about to share comes from one infamous Easter in 1952. On that day, Gladys arrived with her three young children in tow. Now, let me just name that anyone who has brought children anywhere on Easter, God bless you. I know from a friend, not that this happens in my own home. No, of course it happens in my own home. Jonah, are you listening, buddy? We don't even own khakis anymore in our house. We can't get kids into Easter clothes except with maybe a crowbar and a lot of bribery. So for all of you wearing dress-up clothes, wearing clip-on ties, and for all the things we said to make that happen, God loves you, God forgives you. And we remember that Gladys came by herself with three kids in tow to worship on Easter. And on this ill-fated day, the pastor of the church at the time, who was, and I quote, too smart for his own good, was preaching on Easter Sunday about all sorts of things. He was preaching about spring and new life and baby rabbits and baby chicks and flowers and all of these things that we see in our world that point toward resurrection, but he never actually mentioned the resurrection. And so on that fateful day, at the end of the benediction, Gladys Lowenhaupt and her three children turned on their heels and walked out of Ebenezer Church and down to the Missouri Synod Lutherans because, and again, I quote, at least they know how to get Jesus out of the tomb. Ouch. And thank God for Gladys. It's our job as the church to proclaim the message that the tomb is empty. But we'll talk about the theology of the church getting Jesus out of the tomb a little later. It's our job to talk about the resurrection, but we can't pole vault over Good Friday to get to Easter. If we remember a few days back, we were dealing with the absolute worst of humanity and the absolute best of who Jesus is. He forgives his disciples. He washes the feet of all of them, even the one who will betray him. He endures agony in the garden as he prayed for any other way to get through this, but ultimately obeying what was laid out for him to do, to die on the cross for us after being betrayed, after being tortured, after suffering, after being spat on, after being humiliated. All of this happened just a few days ago before our gospel story today. If any of that had happened to our beloved teacher or friend, any of us who's ever lost anyone knows that even within a couple of days, we are not exactly in an Easter mood. So it shouldn't surprise us that it took a while for that message of the risen Lord to sink in for the women who showed up at the tomb, for Mary Magdalene and the disciples. The women at the foot of the cross stood there in these days, bearing witness to the darkness that fell at noon. In Luke's gospel, everybody who was a follower of Jesus all the way from Galilee, watching him feed people, teach people, heal people, to feed out of impossible odds to heal on the Sabbath. All these things, these faithful people watched from a distance as Jesus died in a garbage dump next to two criminals. As the world got dark in what should have been the middle of the day. And the women keep watch. At the first available opportunity, they are at the tomb, bearing spices, bearing oils. And in John's gospel, we hear the story of Mary Magdalene, who is there, the first on the scene, responding in the best way she can to the trauma and loss of Jesus, her teacher, her friend, someone who loved her and someone whom she loved. Mary Magdalene is there, staring at that blackness. We're left with that moment before the rest of it, before the news of the resurrection. But that image of that empty tomb reminds me of a black hole. There are many images that have saturated our news feeds in the last couple of weeks. The burning of the Cathedral of Notre Dame, the burning of three black churches in Louisiana who were victims of racial hatred and our own brokenness here in the world. We heard the heroic story of the chaplain who went into the Cathedral of Notre Dame to rescue the crown of thorns and the Blessed Sacrament, the sacrament being what? The body and blood of Christ. As Angela put it, to rescue the one who rescues us. Out of the middle of all that smoke and ruins, how many of us remember that image of the cross shining in that cathedral? What a powerful image for Holy Week, for Good Friday, to point towards something else. But I can't let go of that image of the first photo of a black hole. For those of you who can't see it, the image is this. It's the joy of the postdoc fellow and MIT researcher Katie Bauman, who, as part of a team, assembled incredible amounts of data with telescopes all over the world to photograph an image of the first black hole. This is not some ordinary thing that you can take a picture of. The black hole sucks everything within its range into a crushing level of gravity that is unimaginable, beyond measure. It actually absorbs light, and a photograph is a capturing of light. So how do you take a picture of something where there is no light? Well, this happens in community. In the case of photographing this black hole, this huge network of scientists specialized with gamma telescopes all over the world, even including Antarctica, focusing in this one part of the universe, gathering incredible amounts of data, trying to pull signal from all that atmospheric noise. It took an entire community of science working around the clock for years to pull this together, but ultimately it was Bauman's algorithm, her math problem, that helped pull all this vast sum of data into something that could be translated into an image. But I can't imagine how long it took them to stare at the blackness, squinting to try to make sense of all that darkness. It's where we find ourselves in the beginning of this gospel story. Like the disciples, like the scientific community rather, the disciples don't quite know how to trust what they are seeing, let alone trust the woman who told her the news that the tomb is empty. Peter and the beloved disciple engage in a foot race. And in John's gospel, the narrator, aka John, humble brags about winning the race. I totally would have done the same thing, but we must move on. Peter and the beloved disciple, they go into this space and stare into the blackness themselves, and they believe. But what is it that they believe? They don't believe quite that the resurrection has happened. They finally just begin to believe Mary, who stared at that blackness and that empty tomb. You see, we don't often give women enough credit for the discoveries they make. This young woman, Katie Bauman, certainly didn't fit the profile of the lone genius male scientist. She wasn't a Da Vinci or a Galileo or an Alexander Graham Bell or an Albert Einstein. She definitely did not have Albert Einstein's hair. She didn't quite fit the mold, and there is an incredible amount of online abuse and brokenness trying to discredit this young woman who is captured in this moment of joy. And that is so true in science. Time and again, we ignore the women who tell the truth, who see something out of the darkness. We ignore the hidden figures, those women who helped launch John Glenn into the moon, Katherine Johnson, Dorothy Vaughan, and Mary Jackson, African-American women in the civil rights era working at NASA. Only now are we hearing this story. Or the story of Rosalind Franklin, who, through her work in X-ray crystallography, helped clarify the image that would unlock DNA, our genetic code, the source of our lives, and who we are, and how we might develop as God's creatures in the world. These women don't often get credit for what they share with the rest of the world. Time and again, we fail to believe them as they bring the impossible into focus. The women at the cross stood there as the light faded. They stood there looking at all that darkness, all that violence, all that betrayal, all that cruelty, just like we stare out at the world and see so much of the same things. For anyone who is inviting us to live our best lives now, we try, but we fail. As Paul reminds us, if we are living for this life only, we are a people most to be pitied. If this is it, count me out. There is something beyond. And the women who stared at the black hole of the tomb, who could stare at Jesus in the darkness of the cross, see something else. They can move through the shock and the loss. They can see in the darkness the possibility of the sun. You see, those disciples didn't really believe, but one of the things I love about Mary is that rather than running away, trying to figure it out, she stays and she weeps and she prays at that tomb. She sticks with the darkness, continuing to look for the sun. And it's there, through that tear-streaked lens of her eyes. It's there in the midst of that she sees the angels. It's there that she sees Jesus and yet doesn't recognize him. And yet in the midst of our grief, in the midst of our loss, in the midst of our broken world, or even this morning in Sri Lanka, 200 people are killed as they worship at Easter. In the midst of all this blackness, we know the story of the beginning of God turning the world upside down, that over 2,000 years ago, we were all saved by one who, even though we don't recognize him, calls us by name. Wherever you are, whether this is an Easter day or whether this is still a rough and tumble Good Friday, whether you have kept the fast or whether you have not, whether you screamed at your kids to get them here or whether you didn't, God's love is for you because Christ is risen. We have seen the Lord, and the Lord is risen indeed. Thanks be to God.